Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Are the Popes Infallible? When we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values, and that's because these two programs are the second and the eighth planks to the Communist Manifesto. And these programs call for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing. And Social Security is a social welfare scheme that takes the place of strict liability and individual responsibility. This income tax requires of us that we serve two masters in violation of Matthew 6, verse 24. The income tax requires us to rob God in violation of Malachi 3, verse 8. This income tax requires us to commit idolatry in violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. The income tax requires of us that we use unjust weights and balances in violation of Leviticus 19, 35, and 36. The income tax requires of us that we sign contracts with these foreign and alien gods, called government, in violation of Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. Social Security violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. Social Security violates the 10th commandment by appealing to our lust and greed, and then we're taught to call that income redistribution. The scripture calls it just what it is, covetousness, in violation of Exodus 20, verse 17. Now, you know, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that. And our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention followed that better way by inserting into our Constitution, at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. And that's why I contend that you and I should learn and practice that better way of life. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Our school, Tax and Status, is available on compact disc for adult home education, and if you're online, you can just go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email. Send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. Hey, are these popes infallible? Do popes make mistakes? I think in the last two programs I've pointed out a lot of mistakes. I think adultery is a mistake. I think murder is a mistake. In fact, those are crimes. And the Ten Commandments give us the foundation. It's the Constitution of the Bible. You know, if we were looking at our Constitution of the United States, it's the fundamental doctrine of law that we follow here. And then our Congress comes into play and they make statutes. Our Supreme Court comes up with judgments. And then our president, our executive branch, executes those judgments and those laws throughout the land. So our Constitution, then, is the fundamental law of the land. Well, the Ten Commandments are the fundamental law of God, the fundamental law of the Bible. And in addition to the Ten Commandments, we have statutes. There are statutes that construe the basic law, like thou shalt not steal is the basic law. And then a statute says you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Don't use Federal Reserve notes and unjust weights and balances. You know, use gold and silver coin. Don't steal from people. Pay them. I know it's a wild new concept, but I thought I'd throw that out there and ask, well, do the popes follow the Ten Commandments? Well, in the last two programs, we took a look, and no, they practiced adultery. Does that mean that every pope practiced adultery? I don't know. Probably not. There probably was one pope, maybe two, that didn't practice adultery. But most of them did. Most. And that's because the Catholic Encyclopedia and the Vatican records keep a history on these popes. And I guess that's public. I guess the Catholics have made it public. I'd want to hide it if it was me. I'd want to bury that so deep, I wouldn't want to admit that I was a part and parcel of a program like that. I'd want to flee from that kind of sin and wickedness, because the Bible tells us that that's wicked, that that's evil, that that's rotten. Don't do that. Well, now, these same people, I don't know who started it here, let's find out. In the book called Babylon, Mystery, Religion, Ancient and Modern, it's written by a fellow by the name of Ralph Woodrow back in 1966. It's been published 27 times. It's been reprinted 27 times. It doesn't tell us how many books are out or how many copies are out in circulation, but he went to the Vatican records and the Catholic Encyclopedia, put a little book together, so not very big, 125 or 30 pages. Let's see. No, it's about 165 pages. Not much. A little paperback book. But he's got quite a few chapters. They're short and to the point. And he's just citing from the encyclopedia. And here's the chapter 13. Are the popes infallible? Well, where'd that concept come from? Protestants take a look at this doctrine of the Catholic Church. The popes are infallible, and they reject that. They reject the Pope as the leader, or the supreme leader, or the only leader of Christianity. That's number one. And then they reject this infallibility of the papacy. Catholics evidently embrace it. Well, I'm not a Catholic or a Protestant or a Jew. I'm not claiming, you know, that I belong to any of these religious groups or organizations, just as an outsider looking in. Just reading what you people say about yourselves. That's what I'm reporting on here. So if you're a Catholic, you know, and you're going to write me an email and give me a piece of your mind, I want to tell you in advance that I'm not telling tales out of school. I'm reporting what the Catholic Encyclopedia tells you. I'm not over here picking on you. This is a historical documentation. I'm a reporter. I'm reporting some historical facts over here, and I'm doing that as an adjunct to what I reported to you last week concerning, a few days ago, concerning these 70 million Christians out here, these evangelical Christians that are beating the war gongs and the war drums. They want to go to war against Iran. They want a preemptive strike. I'm reading between the lines, I think they want a preemptive nuclear strike. In any event, they want to bomb the Iranians. And, you know, just kind of reading between the lines, at least some of them, a bunch of them, want a nuclear strike. I guess we're going to drop a nuclear weapon on Tehran. I don't know, guys. I got to tell you, I'm not really sure we ought to be getting involved in things like that. I don't think that I'm surprised. If the God of heaven would let us do that and get away with it, I would be surprised. I'm not at all for that. But anyway, we got to ask ourselves: are these religious people over here a threat to the health, safety, and welfare of the planet? And my conclusion is yes. They have been in the past. I believe they are today, and I believe they're going to be even a greater threat to us, all of us, in the future. The religious guys. Now, the popes, are they infallible? Well, adding to the many contradictions with which the Romanish system is already plagued, or was already plagued, there were popes, like the god Janus of olden times, who began to claim infallibility. And while the basic meaning of papal infallibility had to do with defining doctrines, people naturally questioned how popes could be infallible in doctrine, when some had been very poor examples in morals and integrity. Even a number of the popes, including Virilinus, V-I-R-I-L-I-N-U-S, Innocent III, Clement IV, Gregory XI, Hadrian VI, and Paul IV had rejected the doctrine of papal infallibility. So evidently some of the popes here, and here's a list of them, six or eight of them here, that rejected this doctrine of papal infallibility. I want to tell all of you out there that the Protestants in mass reject this concept of the infallibility of the Pope. And I'm suspicious. So, just how could all of this be explained in an acceptable manner? Such was the task of the Vatican Council of 1870. The wording finally adopted was this, quote, "The Roman Pontiff, when he speaks ex cathedra, that is, when in the exercise of his office as pastor and teacher of all Christians, he defines a doctrine of faith or morals to be held by the whole church, is by reason of the divine assistance promised to him in blessed Peter, possessed of that infallibility, and consequently such definitions of the Roman Pontiff are irreformable. All of the problems," that's unquote there, "all of the problems were not solved by this wording. Nevertheless, papal infallibility became an official dogma of the Roman Catholic Church at the Vatican Council of 1870. All right. Now, I said I'm suspicious. You know, there's 476, last time I counted, 476 Christian denominations, sects, incorporated churches, and so on. At least, that's how many claim 501c3 tax exemption here in the United States. And all of those churches have different viewpoints concerning various doctrinal issues. So, the Pope over here, according to the Vatican Council, comes along. We're going to settle this argument over here. When the Pope speaks, he speaks for all Christians. So, you've heard me say a time or two here on this program, well, don't count me in there because I'm not a Christian. Count me out. Now, when I do that, people, really, that's where, if I'm tired and I don't have much to do, and I need some emails to read, I just need to make that statement, I'm not a Christian. And boy, my email box just lights up. People like, well, now, Mr. Gordon, why aren't you a Christian? You know, Jesus was a Christian, and you know, so on we go. And the reason that I try to avoid that label being hung on myself is that I don't want this guy representing me, my thoughts, or my thought patterns. And these people are pretty, you know, these people here at the Vatican Council, you know, are kind of like Hillary Clinton in a way. She wants everybody in America to have health insurance. And I'm sitting over here saying, no, Hillary, I don't want health insurance. I want you to leave George Gordon out of the National Health Insurance Program. Butt out of my life, Hillary. John Edwards, butt out. That's my position. And I want the Pope and all of religiosity to butt out of my life. Let me go to hell by myself, would you? You Christians out there, work real hard and save yourself, would you? The Apostle Paul had something to say about that. You know, he said, work out your own salvation. And he put a little comment with that. He said, with fear and trembling. And that's what I'm doing. I'm working out my own salvation here. I've got a plan. And for all you Christians out there, George Gordon has a plan. I took a look in the Bible, I took a look at the Vatican Councils, I took a look at the Catholic Encyclopedia. And there's some of the stuff that I've rejected. I said, yeah, I know it doesn't make sense to me, and I just don't think I want to do that. So I've rejected that. What I did was I took a look at the Bible and I said, I think the Ten Commandments are a pretty good plan. We Americans practiced the Ten Commandments here in the United States of America from 1787 to 1900, and we did damn good here. We did real good. In fact, even after we rejected the Ten Commandments and God and the Bible and prayer, starting about 1900 through 1950, and adopted communism And evolutionary philosophy, we didn't do bad. Didn't do quite as good, but we didn't do bad. Even with communism, you know, even with the filth and perversity that we adopted through evolutionary philosophy from 1900 to 1950, even from 1950 to 2000, while we've been on the slippery slope, sliding off of our high point, going down into the depths of depravity and hell, we're still better off than most people in the world. Not for a whole lot longer, but still. And so I take a look at that and I say, I think the Ten Commandments can't be beat. And so I'm going to practice the Ten Commandments and I'm going to work real hard and I'm going to obey God, keep His commandments. And I know you Christians are sitting out there saying, you know, you're law-bound, Gordon. Yep, I'm law-bound. You got that right. I don't deny it. And then some guy's going to write me an email and say, you know, you're trying to save yourself by works, and you're right about that too. I am. And I'm going to try to save myself by works. I'm going to quit breaking the Sabbath, and I'm going to see if that'll help me a little bit. It might not save me, but I don't think it's going to hurt a whole bunch. I kind of likened that to one time I was in a bar, and I gave this guy the finger, and he beat the living hell out of me. And then I got to thinking about that a little bit, and I said, you know, if I hadn't given that guy the finger, I probably would feel a whole lot better right about now. So now when I go in the bar, I keep my hands in my pockets. And I've discovered that when you stop giving people the finger, you're going to feel a whole lot better for a whole lot longer. So I applied that to God, and I said, you know, if I quit giving God the finger, I might feel a lot better a lot longer. So I thought, I think I'll quit giving that guy the finger. Now, it's true, and you could be 100% right, you Christians out there that are going to write me an email and say, you cannot be saved by works. You know, you probably got a good point there. But I'm not really sure that you guys can be saved without works. I'm suspicious. Damn suspicious about going out here and committing adultery, sodomy, fornication, Sabbath breaking, and then coming into church and saying, I'm just feeling real sad, Jesus, today. And won't you forgive me? Like Jimmy Swaggart, you know. And then going out and doing that again tomorrow. I worked for a guy like that one time. He's old Francis Capini. Hell of a nice guy. God, I love Francis. He's a Catholic. Capini. You know, Italian guy. Dairyman, hard worker, great guy. Well, anyway, he'd go to confession on Thursday night. Never knew that Francis Capini ever missed confession. And he'd go in and he'd confess to the priest on Thursday. Then Friday night and Saturday, he's out here committing adultery with every temple prostitute that he could find in Ferndale, Lolita, or Eureka, California. I mean, that guy, he had a sex life all of his own. He had a wife and six kids. I thought his wife was a pretty wonderful lady. I always liked his wife. Not in the wrong way either. I admired her. I thought she was a wonderful wife and a good mother. And I just couldn't understand why Francis Capini would be out here screwing all the temple prostitutes and with the blessing of the Catholic Church in the process. I guess he had the blessing of the Catholic Church. He went to confession every Thursday. So anyway, that was just my thinking on the subject. So I thought, well, shucks, maybe I ought to try that too, especially since the Messiah said that we ought to follow in His steps. And he was pretty hot and heavy, you know, on the Beatitudes, you know, in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, you know, he was kind of hot and heavy about how, what we ought to be doing and what we ought not to be doing. And I showed you in the last couple programs, you know, that these popes over here, they went out and done a lot of bad things. And are they going to go to heaven? I don't know. I'm not the judge. I can't tell you who's going to go to heaven, who ain't going to heaven. From what I read in the Bible, ain't none of us going to heaven. In fact, I see here in the Scripture that the reward of the saved is rulership over the nations, eternal life, and the inheritance of the earth. That's what I saw in the Scripture. But then, you know, I haven't been to seminary, so evidently I don't know anything. But I've got my beliefs, I've got my thinking, and I'd just like to continue on with that. And I wish you Catholics and Christians and Protestants out there quit knocking on my door. You know, I'm appreciative of the fact that you're concerned about my salvation. I really don't need to be burned alive in a barn to save my soul from hell. Honest to God, I just don't believe that. So would you please not murder me because I don't believe like you do? Would you please just butt out of my life and leave me alone, Hillary? And one of these days, you're probably right, Hillary, and I'm probably going to come down with cancer or Parkinson's disease or something, some horrendous disease, and I won't have any health care insurance. Hillary, would you just let me die? Just butt out of my life, leave me alone, and let me die. Americans haven't been able to do that in our history. We can't butt out of Iraq. We just got to be over there helping them people establish democracy. I'm not sure that those people want democracy, but I want you Iraqis over there to understand, we Americans over here, we cannot live until we have imposed our superior political ideology upon all of you good people in Iraq. And so I suggest that you Iraqis sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and accept our democracy, because if you don't, we're going to kill all of you. If you think 4 million of you being displaced refugees is bad, you wait until you keep rejecting our democracy and you see what we do to you. And you Iranians over there better wake up too. Because we've decided over there that you people over there are behaving in an aberrant fashion, and we don't agree with the way you're behaving, the way you believe, and what you're doing and practicing, and we're going to come over there and straighten you people out. And I want you Iranians to know it's nothing personal, but we Americans over here cannot live without interfering and intervening in your lives and bringing to you the superior civilization of America. I'm not quite sure why that is, but I want to tell you that our history has been, we just cannot live without butting into everybody else's business. And our presidential candidates over here just have to butt into my business. They're not offering me a choice, you know, like if you'd like to join up with this healthcare program over here, you know, you can come in and sign up. No, this is a mandatory healthcare program here in America. Now, religious people are like that. And Hillary is a communist, and Hillary is religious, and because communism is a religion, Hillary is one of the high priestesses of communism. She's religious. And if I don't accept it, I'm sure that she'll kill me. And if she doesn't, it won't be because she doesn't want to. People that disagree with politicians and religious people are heretics, and heretics need to be dealt with summarily. And that's what scares the hell out of me. They just can't let people like me just live our lives. They just can't butt out. Now, knowing the history of the Pope, several Catholic bishops opposed making papal infallibility a dogma of the Council. One of these bishops, his name was Joseph Strassmayer. He lived from about 1815 to 1905. And is described in the Catholic Encyclopedia as one of the most notable opponents of papal infallibility. So he pointed out that some of the popes had opposed other popes. Special mention was made of how Pope Stephen VI, from 896 to 897, had brought former Pope Formosus, from 891 to 896, to trial. And the famous story of one pope bringing another to trial is one of sheer horror, for Pope Formosus had been dead for 8 months. Nevertheless, the body was brought from the tomb and placed on a throne, and there before a group of bishops and cardinals was the former pope dressed in a rich apparel of the papacy, a crown upon his loose scalp, and the scepter of the holy office in the stiff fingers of his rotting hand. As the trial got underway, the stench of the dead body filled the assembly hall. Pope Stephen stepped forward and did the questioning. Of course, the dead pope gave no answers. No answers were given to the charges by the dead man, so he was proved guilty as charged because he failed to deny the allegations made against him. With this, the bright robes were ripped from his body, the crown from his skull, the fingers used in bestowing the pontifical blessing were hacked off of his body and was thrown into the streets. Behind a cart, the body was dragged through the streets of Rome and finally cast into the Tiber River. All right. Where'd we get that? Catholic Encyclopedia. Is it true? Did this really happen? Boys and girls, your guess is as good as mine. That is absolutely insane. Here's a historical fact reported in the Catholic Encyclopedia of the aberrant behavior of a madman called the Pope. Obviously. I mean, you know, to dig a guy up, to take him out of his tomb, bring him in here, put on a trial, hack off his fingers, find the guy guilty, is insane. There isn't any other way to describe this kind of aberrant behavior, for crying out loud. And yet, here's a historical fact. Here's something that happened back in history. Now, of course, the Pope that did this is infallible. You're telling me that I'm supposed to follow after and believe this kind of crap? You know, you Catholics out there wonder why it is that there are people that are anti-Catholic. That's why, right there. That's why I'm anti-Catholic. Now, am I opposing you being a Catholic? Not at all. I believe in freedom of speech, freedom of choice, freedom of action. I want you Catholics to be free. I want you to believe any crap you want to believe. I just don't want you to kill me to get me to believe this kind of nonsense. Nonsense, worse than that. I don't want you to kill me because I don't believe this kind of insanity. Now, if you're wondering why people have adopted evolutionary philosophy, which is another form of insanity, it's because people who are educated, people who go to college, people who can see and understand that the world, the earth, you know, is in an orbit around the sun, and that it turns on its orbit, and that it's a sphere and it's not flat. People, you know, that have eyes to see, ears to hear, and still have some of their mental faculties intact, when they read about this kind of historical insanity, they reject religion totally. That's why one famous evolutionist said, "The reason we believe in evolution is because the alternative is just unacceptable. The alternative here that we're all presented with, you know, in church and Sunday school, is religion." Well, for all of you evolutionists out there, I couldn't agree with you more. I reject this kind of insanity also. I mean, the idea of digging up a dead body, putting it on trial, while it stinks up the courtroom, for crying out loud, to find this corpse guilty so that you can hack off its fingers and then drag it through the streets and throw it in the river is insane. There just isn't any other description for it. And then they come to us and say, "Now we want you to believe that the successors, you know, to this kind of insanity are infallible. That when we tell you something, that's the truth, and you better believe it." No, it's not the truth. It's a damn lie. It's perversion. It's filth. It's rotten. But then, so is evolution. Evolutionary religion is just as rotten as this. It's just that maybe it's not quite as rotten. Evolutionists, to the best of my knowledge, now, aren't openly going out here saying, "If you don't believe in evolution, we're going to kill you." It's the religious people that say, "If you don't believe in my religion, we're going to kill you." That's the scary part. So, you know, if I had my druthers, I'd just druther that the evolutionists stay in power because, you know, you religious people say, "Well, we want to take evolution out of the public schools and we want to replace it with religion." I would suggest that we throw evolution out of the public schools and replace it with the Bible. Why don't we take the lies and replace it with the truth? Why take one set of lies out and then replace it with another set of lies? So we did that. You know, we took religion, we took the Bible out of the public schools under the guise of religion and replaced it with another lie called evolution, and now we want to take evolution out and replace it with another lie called religion. Could we try something different this time, next time, sometime? Let's try taking the science of the Bible and putting it in the public school instead of the superstition of religion and the superstition of evolution. Why don't we put in the truth of the scripture? Divorce it from Catholicism. Divorce it from Protestantism. Divorce it from the Buddhists. I know, it's a wild new idea. Well, one pope condemned another. Then a short time later, the second successor of Stephen had the body of Formosus. That's F-O-R-M-O-S-U-S, Formosus, which a monk had drawn from the Tiber, reinterred with full honors in St. Peter's. He furthermore annulled at a synod the decisions of the court of Stephen VI and declared all orders conferred by Formosus valid. John the Ninth confirmed these acts at two synods. On the other hand, Sergius III, 904 to 911, approved in a Roman synod the decisions of Stephen's synod against Formosus. Sergius and his party meted out severe treatment to the bishops consecrated by Formosus, who in turn had meanwhile conferred orders on many other clerics, a policy which gave rise to the greatest confusion. Such sharp disagreement between popes certainly argues against the idea of papal infallibility. I'd like to go a step further. It argues for papal insanity. Pope Honorius I, after his death, was denounced as a heretic by the Sixth Council, held in the year 680. Pope Leo II confirmed his condemnation. If popes are infallible, how could one condemn another? I want to point out in the scripture, there's no confusion. There's confusion in religion. I don't deny that. But religion doesn't get its ideas, its understanding, or its doctrines from the Bible. So for all of you evolutionists out there and all of you heretics, the religious people do not get their doctrines out of the Bible. They claim to, but they don't. And they lie a lot. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet every day, daily. Now, for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling site on our webpage. Now, the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate, and that's because most of the authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program, though, are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the infallibility of the popes. Even the popes themselves are in disagreement, historically, over whether or not the popes are infallible. Now, I'm going to leave it to you to decide whether they're infallible. I'm not here to tell you they are or aren't. I'm suspicious. I don't believe it. If you do, have at it. But would you please not kill me because I disagree with you? Because I'm a pretty broad-minded guy, and I'm not going to kill you because you disagree with me. So I think you ought to be real fair about that, and don't kill me because I don't agree with you, and I won't kill you because you don't agree with me. And that way you're free to have your disagreements and your beliefs all by yourself, and then I'm free to have my disagreements and my beliefs all by myself. That's what we Americans have traditionally believed in. We're not Catholics, but we don't oppose you Catholics from having your beliefs. And you Catholics aren't Protestants, and Catholics in this country have traditionally, I don't know if you're always going to do this, but you have always traditionally, at least until modern times, allowed us Protestants to live our lives and believe our beliefs without killing us. But it hasn't always been that way, you Catholics. You have killed us Protestants over here, about 100 million of us, because we didn't agree with you, and you called us heretics. See? So we haven't done the same to you. I can't remember any inquisition by the Protestants against the Catholics. I just see the Catholic inquisitions against the Protestants. I use the word us Protestants over here because, I'm outside the Catholic orb over here. And I'm a reporter, so I'm reporting to you Catholics what you may not have heard in church. Oftentimes, you don't hear the bad side of your organization. That makes all the sense in the world, The people, in the Mormon church, who are the upper echelons of the church, they're not out here telling you what they did that was wicked, awful, terrible, and evil in olden days. They just ignore that, see. And then they tell you all the good things. And, the Mormons have a lot of good things that they've done, and so do the Catholics, and so, everybody's got these good things. And so they tell you about all the good things they do. All the charities that they give to, and all the crippled children that they help, and one thing and another, and then they don't tell you about the bad parts. And I'm telling you here about the bad parts because I'd like to see if we could we avoid doing that in the future? Could we learn from history? Could we learn from our mistakes? So, Pope Vigilius. It's V-I-G-I-L-I-U-S, Vigilius, after condemning certain books, removed his condemnation, afterward condemned them again, and then retracted his condemnation, then condemned them again. So where's the infallibility there? Now, this is Pope Vigilius, after condemning certain books, removed his condemnation, then condemned them again, then retracted his condemnation, then condemned them again. And the question arises, is this guy infallible? Most of us people out here, we're just Joe Sixpacks and Sally Housewives, and we're not infallible, and we make mistakes. We make some of the same mistakes that these popes make. We don't claim to be infallible, and because of that, we don't think these popes are infallible. And we look at the behavior of these popes, and we say, these people are insane. Now, boys and girls, we might as well make up our minds to this. A lot of times, insane people rise to the top and become our president. They become senators and representatives and Supreme Court justices. They become dictators like Saddam Hussein. And I wouldn't doubt for a minute that Saddam Hussein was a pretty bad actor on the international scene, having killed and murdered many, many people. So we Americans go over to Iraq to straighten out the mess. And honest to God, I think we've killed more people than Saddam Hussein ever killed. I think the cure that we are applying in Iraq, now, honest to God, as sincere as we Americans are, I think that our cure was worse than the Iraqi disease. And that's why I'm kind of hesitant to go to war against the Iranians. I'm not sure that we've thought this out real well. I'm not sure that we've got a better solution for the Iranians than the Iranians have for themselves. I'm not sure that opening a third front in the Middle East makes sense. You know, if you can't put another 200,000-400,000 troops in Iraq to stabilize the place, which every military man says, you know, if you want a military solution, 160,000 Americans won't do it. You got to have more. And then somebody told me the other day, I don't know, some general I saw on TV, probably on McNeil there, I said, we're stressed. We haven't got any more troops to put in there. And then I hear all these Christians out here saying, we need to go to war against Iran. I mean, that sounds like Adolf Hitler after he's got the Russian front gone. And then after he's got the Western front gone, he goes down and attacks Brazil. Hell, even Hitler was smarter than that. I'm not so sure opening that second front in Russia was one of his brighter moves, but then, you know, I'm not a general. Maybe that was a good military move. I can't tell you it was or wasn't. But just looking back on past history, he lost the war trying to fight two guys at the same time. Now, I admit, you know, the Iraqis, you know, aren't exactly fighting Nazi Germany, and the Afghanis over here, they're not exactly, you know, a Japanese empire. But I'd like to point out to you, boys and girls, do you know that the British Empire, at the peak of its power and its prestige and its military and economic authority in the world, do you know they couldn't conquer Afghanistan? I mean, the mighty British Empire, back in the 1700s and 1800s and 1900s, them Afghanis just kicked them in the hinies, day after day. And so finally the British just left. And that's what Mahatma Gandhi said. You know, in the end, you Englishmen are just going to leave. Okay. Then the Russians took on the Afghanis. I mean, the Russian Empire, you know, in the 1979, the Russians, I mean, they're not pikers. Those Russians are tough. Those Russians are big with nuclear weapons and helicopters. They went in there and the Afghanis just kicked the hell out of them and threw them out. And so here comes the Americans. We couldn't learn from the English. We couldn't learn from the Russians. And here we are in Afghanistan. Okay. I don't know. Maybe we can succeed where the Russians and the British failed. But I'm sitting over here saying, why are we even over there trying? Are we just trying to prove that we're better than everybody else and that we can whip them when nobody else could? You know, like a couple of guys in the bar. And you know, one guy, he whips a guy, and so another guy jumps up and says, well, let me take him on. And then he whips that guy, and then the third guy stands up and says, well, let me try him. Is that where we're at here in America? Hey, let's stand up. Hey, we think we can. You know, we today look at this and say, well, we're not exactly infallible. You know, Hitler wasn't exactly infallible. The Russians weren't exactly infallible. But the Catholics, they run around saying, well, but we are. And the one time in the 11th century, dueling was authorized by Pope Eugene III. Later, Pope Julius II and Pope Pius IV. At one time in the 11th century, there were three rival popes, all of which were deposed by the council convened by the Emperor Henry III. Later in the same century, Clement III was opposed by Victor III, and afterwards by Urban II. Now, how could popes be infallible when they opposed each other? What is known as the Great Schism came in 1378 and lasted for 50 years. Italians elected Urban VI, and the French cardinals chose Clement VII. Popes cursed each other year after year until a council disposed both and elected a third. Pope Sixtus V had a version of the Bible prepared which he declared to be authentic. 2 years later, Pope Clement VIII declared that it was full of errors and ordered another to be made. Pope Gregory I repudiated the title of universal bishop as being profane, superstitious, haughty, and invented by the first apostate. And yet, through the centuries, other popes have claimed this title. Pope Hadrian II, from 867 to 872, declared civil marriage to be valid, but Pope Pius VII, 1800 to 1823, condemned them as invalid. Pope Eugene IV, 1431 to 1447, condemned Joan of Arc to be burned alive as a witch. Later, another pope, Benedict IV, in 1919, declared her to be a saint. God, I'll bet that made Joan feel real good. Now she's a saint. When we consider the hundreds of times and ways that popes have contradicted each other over the centuries, we can understand how the idea of papal infallibility is difficult for many people to accept. So for you Catholics out there, I want to let you know, it is absolutely impossible for anybody outside of Catholicism who is not brain dead to accept such insanity. And that's our view, you know. And you Catholics, now you're entitled to your view. We're not here to condemn your view or your belief. I just wanted to report to you and let you know why it is that the rest of us over here, we look at this and we say, hey, wait a minute here, guys. Have you lost your marbles? I'm not sure that a lot of you Catholics out there knew any of this. You probably accepted, you know, the infallibility of the Pope as a part of your religious doctrine, just like I accepted the Lutheran Church as being the only true church, because that's what I was told when I was 12 years old. I got to looking at that years later, and I said, well, wait a minute. These Lutherans represent about 3.5 million people. My common sense said, excuse me, no, God is going to save 3.5 million people and throw 1 billion Catholics into hell fire to burn for eternity because you Catholics weren't fortunate enough to be born into the Lutheran Church. And then you Catholics out there are saying, well, now we're all going to heaven and all you Lutherans are going to hell because you weren't fortunate enough to be born into the Catholic Church. And then there's other people out here that aren't totally brain dead, and they look at this insanity and they say, let me off this boat, would you please? They just want to get the hell out of here. So when an evolutionist says, the reason that I believe in evolution is because the alternative is unacceptable, I couldn't agree more. The alternative that we have been offered to this insanity is unacceptable. Now we've been offered another unacceptable alternative called evolution. I would like to suggest a third alternative. Let's get the hell away from this religion and evolution, which is another religion. Let's take up the scripture and let's find out what our Creator had to say about this. What did God say about the world's configuration? Is it round or flat? If the Bible says the world is flat, then let's reject the Bible for the lie that it is. But if the Bible says the world is round and uses the word sphere, which is a little better than circle, then let's believe the Bible because that's what we can all see and what we can all agree to. I think that all Catholics would agree the world's round, won't you? I think all Protestants agree that the world is round. Last time I heard, the Japanese, Chinese, Russians, Brazilians, I think just about everybody on planet Earth will agree the world is round. Did you know the Bible in Isaiah 40 verse 22 says the world is round, furthermore says it's a sphere. Sphere. That's pretty definite. That's science. That's a scientific statement. Now, irrespective of who it was, back in ancient times it said the world was flat, being carried on the back of a turtle, being held up by Atlas or somebody else, those were pagan superstitions. That isn't true. I suggest we reject these pagan superstitions and pick up where there's some truth. Now, I know a lot of you people say, well, I think the Bible is pagan superstition. I'm not sure you people actually read the Bible. I think you've been reading stories about the Bible that were put out by Pope so-and-so or by Jimmy such-and-such. And here, if you're a Catholic and if you're reading the Bible, you know, you people are in deep doo-doo. Did you know that you're not supposed to do that? That your Pope, this infallible Pope, told you not to read the Bible. Well, you know, if you don't read the Bible, then you're not going to get the biblical side of the story, no, are you? This is why I think that people should read Mein Kampf. I think people should actually read Hitler's autobiography, so that you get his side of the story. And then I think you should read the Jewish side of the Holocaust story. I think people should look at the whole story. I mean, after all, in the Garden of Eden, we decided a long time ago that we wanted to decide good and evil. God told us not to do that. He said, don't eat off that tree. It's bad for you. And we said, wait a minute, God, don't tell us what we can and can't do. We want to decide for ourselves what's good and what's evil. So we ate off the tree. Okay, now your brain is opened, and now you can decide good and evil. You know, when I was a kid in Corbell, California, we didn't lock our doors. We didn't have any pedophiles. There weren't any bad people. I never heard of bad people. I never heard of wickedness and evil. I lived in this little mill town up in the mountains of Northern California. And, you know, until I was about 7, 8 years old, I didn't know that there were bad people out there. And then I moved to the city of San Francisco, and all of a sudden, you couldn't leave the apartment without being accompanied by an adult, because there were bad people out there. I'm 8 years old. Bad people? What's a bad people? You know, God created us and put us in the Garden of Eden. He said, now, there isn't any need for you to know about sodomy, murder, debauchery, perversion, theft. There's no reason for you people to get involved in that at all. You know, then we said, well, wait a minute. We'd like to know the other side of the story here, God. So we'd like to know about murder, sodomy, alternative lifestyles. We'd like to know about incest, bestiality. And then we'd like to choose for ourselves, you know, our lifestyle. And God said, well, okay. If that's what you want to do, it's a bad mistake. It's going to come back and bite you in the butt. But if that's what you got to do, you got to do what you got to do. And so now we have wars, and we stand around, and we you know, we kind of wring our fingers and hands, and we go, why would God allow my son to be killed in Iraq? Lady, because he joined the army. Because you didn't teach him, thou shalt do no murder. Ladies and gentlemen, don't you know that soldiers are trained killers? Don't you know that the purpose of a soldier, a marine, a bomber pilot, don't you know that his employment is for the express purpose of killing other people? Did you know that? All right. I'm sure that you're all sitting there saying, well, of course we know that. Stupid. Okay. Did you know that when you go over to Iraq or someplace and you start killing people, those people over there are going to try to defend themselves? Did you know that? Did you know that if you go over to Iraq and you start killing those people, they're going to kill you in return? Did it ever enter your mind? Now, all of you people that have people, you know, relatives in the Army and so on, those people in the Army, they all volunteered. And they all rejected the law that said, you shall do no murder. And they said, we're going to Iraq and we're going to kill Iraqis in the name of democracy, in the same way that Columbus said, we're going to kill all these infidel Indians over here in the name of Christ. We're doing it to save their souls from hell. And again, let me repeat, these religious people just scare the living hell out of me. And if they don't scare the living hell out of you, then your head's screwed on backwards. Now, I'd like to suggest that we reject all of this insanity that's going on around us, and let's start thinking about, you know, maybe, you know, this isn't for you. No, maybe not. Maybe thou shalt do no murder isn't for you. Maybe you just have to go out here and kill people. But, you know, you ought to be aware that when you're out here killing people, your Creator said that he who lives by the sword shall perish by the sword. Now, I'm sure you're sitting there saying, well, I thought maybe some Pope said that, or some famous president, or maybe, you know, maybe Shakespeare came up with that line. Oh, no, no. That was Jesus. Live and direct. He said, he that lives by the sword shall perish by the sword. So maybe joining the Army or joining the Marines isn't your best career alternative. I just throw it out there for your consideration. Now, if you just can't contain yourself and you got to go over here and kill people, religious people evidently have taken it upon themselves. 70 million Christian evangelicals are over here advocating that we go to war against the Iranians. I want to suggest that when you do that, those Iranians are going to react in like kind. There's going to be some American blood spilled also, just in case you didn't know that. I don't think you're going to go over there and drop bombs on them guys and get out of there scot-free. You know, I've been a barroom brawler all my life, and I've noticed that when you go into the bar and you grab some guy off the bar stool and you punch him in the nose and knock him on his ass, he gets up off the floor and does the same thing to you. So, you know, if you don't want your nose broke, maybe you better not try to break somebody else's. And so Jesus said, you know, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall have, or they shall know, or they shall receive peace. Now, I don't see myself necessarily as a peacemaker. I'm not a preacher or a prophet. I didn't come here to preach a sermon, tell you to give your heart to Jesus. But as a reporter, I want to report to you that there's a lot of religious people out there that are killers, and they're advocating murder. They're advocating killing people. A preemptive strike by going over to Iran, dropping bombs on those people down there, is murder. For God's sake, at least wait until they come over here and kill three of you so that you can at least go over there and say, well, God, it's self-defense. Self-defense is lawful. But going over there and dropping the bomb first isn't. And remember now, those are religious people that are making those suggestions. And then the people who have gone before us and said that they were infallible were doing the same thing, and they were killing a lot of people in the process. And I'm about out of time again here, boys and girls, so we're going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you're listening to and have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We are open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Hey, our time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.